whereby the Rudd government's $42 billion stimulus package has been said it will be blocked by the opposition in the Senate, and the independents, the Family First and the Greens are hoping to get some sort of Senate inquiry into. Stephen Mayne, thank you for joining me. There are only two words that I can say to you that explain how I feel. And you feel?
It's how exciting.
What do you reckon, Stephen? I mean, this is all big policy stuff, ideological stuff about the best way to deal with the situation that we're in. You must have thoughts.
Well, it is. Well, it's incredible high stakes poker at a political level and at a policy level. And I've seen commentary today saying that Malcolm Turnbull has made the gravest political error of his life. He is a madman. Because how can you deny these schools and battlers of Australia a $42 billion handout? And I must say, I'm at the complete opposite end of the spectrum personally, and I think it's one of the most reckless and outrageously out there proposals I've ever seen.
The $42 billion?
Yeah.
Just too much?
They've announced today...
It's too much to say just pass it. It obviously needs to have a look.
Well, that's right. You've got to sit down and have a discussion. So certainly the time frame is just ridiculous. Six bills by the end of the week.
Mm.
And the government's debt manager put out a note today, and I'll quote from it, over the remainder of the current financial year, there will be two Treasury bond tenders most weeks for amounts ranging between $500 and $700 million. So they're going to be borrowing, if you believe that, about $1.2 billion a week.
That's
offshore. And that is an incredible amount of money. And they've put legislation in the Parliament today to say, can you please lift the maximum we can borrow? It used to be $50 billion under the was what they inherited, and now they're asking for authority to borrow up to $200 billion. So the end game in this global financial crisis is a lot of the banks have fallen over globally, and they've had to be propped up by the government. So now it's a question of whether the governments can stand up. And that's the end game. In a world where there's not enough money to go around, there's a credit squeeze, which governments are big enough to stand up? So Iceland fell over, and Ireland last night came out with an emergency $25 billion cut in government spending because they're living massively beyond their means. So why would you voluntarily just completely squander your balance sheet strength this early in the fight?
Well, I've got a nice little text message here asking the question, though. The world's largest economies have taken unprecedented measures. What makes us so special? I suppose it's like the climate change thing, huh? Not going to happen.
Well, I think the difference with Australia is that we're not, the Americans or the Japanese. We're not a massive economy. We're not net savers. I mean, the Brits have just suffered a run on the pound. The Brits are in crisis. There's talk about whether the Brits will default. You know, the banks have got too many foreign liabilities. And we're only 2% of the world economy. And we borrow $60 billion a year for our current account deficit. And we already have $1 trillion of debt. And our income is plunging. So we're just a little ship on the high seas of a global credit crisis. And our currency has plunged from 98 cents to 63 cents this week. What if it fell to 50 cents? And the government's out there trying to borrow off the rest of the world $1 billion a week, at the same time as the big banks have borrowed $55 billion since November. That's been a really successful program. The government guaranteed their debt, and the banks have gone out and borrowed $55 billion. Now the government's come out and said, well, we're going to crowd this market out, and we're going to be competing for the scarce borrowings. And at the same time on the share market, we are seeing every single day major companies coming out and raising money. Today, Qantas, $500 million. Lendlease this afternoon, gone into a trading halt, capital raising. Westfield yesterday, $3 billion. So the money's only limited. And where should it go?
Well, this is interesting. Joe Hockey was on the program just before, and he said one of the clauses in the legislation that they most opposed was a little clause in there allowing the government to increase their borrowing, something from like $75 million to 220-something.
That's right. The borrowing limit has gone up massively. And
that something that you think is foolhardy?
Well, I just think, have we got the capacity to pull it off? I mean, the government's last bond issue was on January 21, and they managed to borrow 12-year money at just over 4%. So that was a pretty good rate. But if suddenly you're asking for $1 billion a week, and if the currency crashes, what if the world suddenly says, well, that'll be 10%, you're high risk? And if you're on this... you're on this roller coaster where you've committed to all this spending. I mean, I don't know. I thought that maybe we'd see the end of all the middle-class welfare from the Howard years, where the current budget says there'll be $103 billion of welfare. And that's, you know, a huge, huge amount of the budget. 35% of all spending is welfare. And the reality around the world is governments having to cut back. You know, you can't live beyond your means. You can't do get money for nothing. And we're going the other way. And we're actually pushing welfare up to $130 billion this year. And I just worry what's going to be left in the tank. If it gets worse, if we have to nationalise our banks, if we have to bail out property sector, if unemployment goes to 10% and we've got a massive increase in unemployment, if all these new pensioners come along because they're no longer self-funded retirees, what's left? Where do we get the money from?
Is Malcolm Turnbull being incredibly brave? Is this the making of him as a leader?
Well, my personal reaction instantly, and a very senior business figure rang me this morning and said, put this in your diary, one term wonder. In other words, his comment was
Kevin.
But then having read some of the reactions today, read all the papers, all the columnists, listened to the news, I think it's going the other way, in that politically it's going against Malcolm Turnbull. And I think the ultimate proof of the pudding here will be if the Rudd government has to come back and deal with some form of subsequent crisis, a la Ireland, a la other countries where they have to go to the IMF or the currency crashes, and they've got nothing left in the locker, then people will look back at this period and say, this was outrageously reckless and Labor's got to go, they're just tax and spend, you know, this sort of stuff. But if we somehow avoid a recession, the currency holds up and people look at this and they all get their cash payouts and it doesn't fall over, then I think Malcolm Turnbull will look silly and at the next election they'll be able to say, this is the guy who voted against all those payouts that you love. So the ultimate politics will play out as to whether the policy is sustainable. And $1 billion a week, I think it's not. I can't see how you can have accumulated deficits of $118 billion over 4 years, just rewriting all the record books, when last May you said your position was accumulated surpluses of $80 billion over the next 4 years. So a $200 billion turnaround in the federal budget in the space of 12 months, partly global economic crisis, partly deliberate, massive stimulus spending policy injection. It's incredibly brazen and brave, and you would only do that if you were a really, really rich country and you had great strength. And I worry that little old Australia, 2% of the world economy, big foreign debts, plunging national income from resources bubble ending, you know, are we living a dream and just continuing to party on, not realising that the party's over?
Well, Stephen, they're very sobering thoughts.
I'm sorry to be so flat.
I don't mind. I think I like hearing it. I mean, I certainly think it's really important that there's a huge discussion about it and that these things shouldn't be rushed through. And in fact, it's not the democratic way for these things to be rushed through and bullied through the legislative process, because, I mean, that's why we live the way we live, so that we can actually examine things and toss them around.
Well, it is good that we're having a Senate inquiry, but I think some of the things that need to be put on the table are things like...
Would you like to be Bob Brown?
Well, I think it'd be fun. Or Nick Xenophon. I mean, I think, what a lot of fun. Call it, and great idea. Call in Ken Henry. Ken, come in. Let's have a couple of hour chat. Call in the head of the Reserve Bank.
Yeah.
Do you support this?
Yeah.
I mean, today, let's be honest, today should have been all about how much people are saving on their mortgages. Reserve Bank cuts interest rates, record low. You're saving $10 billion a year. Why the government sort of crowded out that feel-good announcement and created a political firestorm, scaring everyone because it must be a disaster, when you could have just had the straight record low interest rates, isn't this great? And then you could have come out later with something more modest. That's where I see the wedge politics and they're attempting to sort of finish off Malcolm Turnbull with that, you know, Kevin Rudd's essay in the Monthly. He's a political ideologue. He's the Goldman Sachs banker. He's the extreme capitalist who, you know, let it rip, all those sort of lines. And it's just an attempt. That's what worries me the most, that it's mainly motivated by the politics rather than, you know, if it really is a national emergency, as Kevin Rudd says, he should be on the phone to Malcolm Turnbull, should be sitting down with him, and they should be forming a war cabinet, and they should be doing it together. Instead, it's just massively divisive and high risk.
Stephen, how can you control what people spend their money on? That's the other question.
Well, it's very difficult. But retail sales up 3.8% in December, which suggests a sort of a $700 million increase seasonally adjusted November through December. You can't control it. So, I mean, yes, you know, probably less than $100 million, but some was spent on the pokies in Victoria. Woolworths saw their pokies profits revenue soar by 5%. A lot was spent in the stores, but at the end of the day, a lot of people are saving it. I mean, they're so scared, they're just paying off their mortgage. And, yeah.
Ladies and gentlemen, we are facing dire circumstances. And in the face of unprecedented losses on the global stage, we must act and act immediately. We will move heaven and earth to ensure Australia will win again in the cricket.
Cricket's on the radio.
Australia take on New Zealand this Friday live from the MCG
on 774 ABC Melbourne.
Libby Gore
on 774 ABC Melbourne.
Twelve minutes to six. This Wednesday, 4th of February, we're just turning into the driveway on the Drive program. Here's Stephen Mayne is sitting with me in the passenger seat and yet driving a whole lot of conversation and debate. We've just been combing through the events in Parliament today, but the stock market itself has also been adventurous today, Stephen.
Well, it has. It started off going a bit higher, and then Malcolm Turnbull came out at 10:30 with his bombshell and just started to fall away, and then we had some weak profit results and more capital raisings, and market finished up 2% down, which was pretty disappointing. But I think if you have a look at the BHP profit result, which is always, you know, the biggest result in our market, it is pretty amazing. I mean, the bottom line figure was down 56% to US $2.6 billion, mainly because they've taken this $5 billion hit closing this nickel mine in WA at Ravensthorpe. But BHP is still an incredibly strong beast, and their cash flow from operations rose by 74% over the half year to US $13 billion. So they're throwing off cash still of about $20 billion Australian dollars. And if you look at where it's coming from, this is where it's quite interesting. This is half year on half year, so the December half in 07 to the December half in 08. Their coal profits went up from $800 million to $4.1 billion. And their iron ore profits went up from $1.67 billion to $4.14 billion. Oil from $1.97 to $2.67. So, and that is the contracts. That is the fact that they've signed all these contracts with the Chinese and the Japanese, and these contracts run until April or May this year, and they've had like 300% increases. So their base metals profits have crashed by $5 billion, and they've disappeared because copper and nickel and all these other metals trade on the spot market, and they've all crashed. So it's almost like it's a train crash, and you can just watch it slowly. BHP's profits will plummet next year when the Chinese and Japanese come out and say, remember those 300% increases in coal and iron ore? Boys, we're halving the price. And you're not going to make $4 billion in a half year from your iron ore and your coal division ever again. Get used to back to the ones and two billions. And so the figures we're seeing today from BHP will be, you know, as good as it gets. It's not quite as good as the 25 billion Australian net profit they made last year, which was an all-time record. But it's still pretty good, but it's coming off. But BHP shares, they held steady today in a falling market, and the company is still valued by the market at about $200 billion. And they've only got about $4 or $5 billion of net debt. So they are, you know, the one big, strong, giant, profitable Australian that isn't out there desperately borrowing $1 billion a week or doing a Westfield and raising $3 billion and annoying the market or watching their shares plunge. I mean, 40 of the companies in the ASX 300, so 40 of the top 300 companies now have a share price that's less than 20 cents. So they're less than the cost of a local call, these chaps. And their shares have crashed, and most of them, it's a debt crisis, because at the end of the day, corporate Australia's just got too much debt, and the property sector is the worst. And the property sector, again, massively sold off today. Who would have ever thought you'd see Westfield doing a desperate $3 billion raising, the Lowy family refusing to put any more money in, the shares plunging 15% today to a six-year low, and the market saying, we reckon Westfield is worth about $10 billion less than what the Lowys and their auditors and the Westfield board actually claim their shopping centres are worth. So it's pretty ugly, but in all of that, there's BHP, as strong as ever, impregnable, but you know, they're going to see their profits crash next year as well.
I read an article with Twiggy Forrester saying that he felt that the Chinese cycle would turn sometime next year. It was Twiggy Forrester and Paul Keating. They were saying it all depends on whether we focus on China or not, and whether Obama focuses on China and embraces China or still treats them as an outpost that we should be slightly afeard of.
Well, I agree. I agree with Paul Keating that China should be, you know, in the architecture, on the Security Council, in the key forums. They are a huge economy. They've been a net lender to the rest of the world. They've got $2 trillion of savings. But their economy has just crashed. I mean, absolutely, like all the Asian economies. The Economist magazine has a cover story this week, just, you know, Asia's crash, just talking about how exports and imports in many countries like South Korea, Taiwan, are crashing by 30 and 40%. And even the US car sales last night were down 50% on average across the board. So it is a train wreck. And as for Twiggy Forrest, well, at the end of the day, he's an evangelist. Yeah. He's always seeing the upside. I remember flying to Perth to go to one of his AGMs and asked him if he was thinking of maybe selling any shares, given they've gone up so much, and he said, "Oh, not at these prices." And of course, it was 500% higher than now. So he's always saying it's a boom forever. So Twiggy comes to Melbourne, he's gone from being worth $13 billion to probably $1.5 billion. You know, the first ever Australian to lose $10 billion on paper that he never had. And he's always been an optimist. He's always talking it up. So of course, he's seen the bottom, and China's going to turn around, and we're all rosy. But we've heard it all before from Twiggy. He's one of these stronger for longer chaps who's now having to eat his words.
I've had a text message wanting to say, watch the nuclear policy change and fund future. What do you think, Stephen?
On the future fund?
Yeah.
Being able to invest in nuclear, well, I think the future fund can probably invest in BHP, which owns Olympic Dam, which is 40% of the world's, Australia is 40% of the world's uranium reserve. So, yeah, I think if you remember back to 1986 and the uranium exports them, I think it was it the MX missile crisis or something? I remember John Dawkins at the time saying, we've got a current account crisis and we had to contemplate everything. So, yeah, we're in the middle of a crisis. Selling things you would never sell before on principle. I mean, John Brumby today, fast-tracking controversial proposals through VCAT. I mean, I'm on the Manningham Council. We had a meeting last night, and there was a lot of talk about the state government being very keen to facilitate our developments around Doncaster Hill, Doncaster Shopping Town, where we've got, you know, Westfield's just spent $600 million out there. They've built Melbourne's best shopping centre. We're hoping to get a whole bunch of development around it. And, you know, we're being told, state government keen, let's get building going, let's get the sods being turned. And I think you're going to see governments everywhere, from local to federal to state, just trying to get things moving because you know, the economy's hit the wall.
I've got so many funny text messages. When I say funny, it's funny because there are some people going, "Ah, oh, God, Stephen's talking sense. He should be talking to Kevin." And then I have another person sending me a text saying, "Is Stephen employed by the Liberal Party to be so negative?" Derek, what do you think?
Well, he used to be.
I mean, I was the spin doctor for Jeff Kennett getting rid of 100,000 public sector workers and selling off everything. So I have got form.
But he wasn't employed to be negative. He just had a gig.
I've been bagging Howard for years. I just bag whoever's in government.
Do you think, Stephen, that, you know, putting together a Senate inquiry and bringing in all those different people, I know we sort of joked about it in a bit, but who would you be bringing in? Who would we be bringing in to discuss this package?
We have to bring in the chief policy makers, so, you know, the Reserve Bank, Future Fund, and Treasury Secretary. Hmm. And I'd be asking questions like, well, what are our foreign reserves? How much do we think we can borrow? You know, those sort of things, I think, you know, it's fair to ask those sort of questions of the experts.
It is, and remember the wise words of John Kenneth Galbraith. Economic forecasting was invented to make meteorology look good.
Well, Stephen Mayne, thank you so much for coming in.
It's always a pleasure, Libby.
It's very exciting.
I'll try and be more upbeat next week if I can.
No, it's good. We've been the biggest,
Mr. Bloom and Bloom, yeah.
Interest rates have never been this low, not for 39 years, way back when.
And they're going lower.
You reckon they'll go lower?
2% by July, official rates.
Derek?
I think Stephen's absolutely right. I think he's spot on with it. There is wiggle room, and the wiggling will continue.
Mm. Yeah. They can go to zero. Maybe they
can
will.
Go to zero.
Let's be like
we
the Japanese.
Want them to go to zero, though.
Why not? We'd save another $35 billion on that $1 trillion household debt. It'd be fantastic.
Stephen Mayne, thank you so much.
Thanks, Libby.